You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd, and this is Tom Talks.
Hello and welcome to Tom Talks, the talk show where we totally talk Tom Cruise. Today we're talking about Minority Report, and with me today is a very special guest. Peter Jackson's King Kong is one of his top five favorite movies. He played football and did theater in high school, and he might be moving to LA in 2021. Please welcome to the show, Garrett Neal.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm very excited. I was glad. I don't know why I hadn't been able to listen before, but I've listened to a couple episodes, even more excited than I was previously.
So you might be moving to Los Angeles. What's taking you out there?
Film industry. You know, Tom Cruise's, you know, he stays up at night trying to save the film industry.
Calling everyone, you know, every agent, every insurance person.
So yeah, I want to work in, like, my number one is I want to try and work in, like, theme parks. Actually, would be my favorite thing. But then, like, right under that would be film, which is, it's worked out really well, actually, because those are, like, two of the hardest hit industries from the pandemic. Theme parks are, like, pretty close to the top. Film is, like, a little lower down, but they're still up there. So that's fun to think about. But right now, those are still the areas that I want to work in, and both of those are fairly located strongly in Los Angeles. So I was supposed to go out as part of DePaul's LA Quarter program last March, which obviously didn't happen. Depending on how the vaccine goes, it's possible that that program could open back up in the spring or summer. And if it does, then I will do that. And if it doesn't, then I will move out in summer anyway, because I know that that's what I want to do. So that's what I'm doing.
Oh yeah. That is the town to be in for both of those potential career paths. You said Peter Jackson's King Kong is one of your top five favorite movies. What are the other four?
The other four are the first Pirates of the Caribbean film, Jurassic Park, Titanic, and Prince of Egypt.
Ooh, all of those are so good. Prince of Egypt. I met the artist of Prince of Egypt. I met him at Comic-Con once, and I bought some prints off of him. He's a fun guy. He also, he just does, like, Jessica Rabbit fan art in his free time, though. So I bought some Jessica Rabbit prints off of him. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
I'm glad to have you on for a Spielberg episode, since you like Jurassic Park. So
yeah. Ooh. Yeah, Spielberg's done a few solid films in his day.
Yeah, a couple.
He's got some experience under his belt.
Every now and again, he has one that's a real hit. Oh,
one of my favorite things is in the Lego Jurassic World video game, you can unlock Steven Spielberg as a playable character, and his attack is he throws Oscar statues at people. And it's pretty funny.
That's so good. I kind of wish that they combined all of the Lego games together into one, like, comprehensive Lego universe type game, so that you could play as all of the characters in all of the worlds. Because I think it'd be fun to play as Bib Fortuna in Lego Harry Potter.
That would be. I mean, they did, you know, back when, like, Toys to Life was, like, a big thing, they did Lego Dimensions. I don't know if you're familiar.
I remember I had a poster of it, but I never played it.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, I mean, because, like, all Lego things are, like, $5 to $10 more expensive than they should be. Like, it was, like, very, like, even more expensive than other Toys to Life games. But, like, you could, like, buy, like, Scooby-Doo or Doctor Who or Shell from Portal, or, you know, there was a Mission Impossible level. And you could play as Ethan Hunt. And so, like, you had to, like, buy, like, an Ethan Hunt minifigure, and then maybe, like, a small, like, vehicle that was, like, somehow related. I don't, it was probably, like, a motorcycle or something. And then if you like put those in the game, you could like play with them in a short like Mission Impossible level, which I always really wanted to get.
What did you think of Tom Cruise's monologue, his rant that was released?
I don't know. It was very Tom Cruise, I guess. I don't know that. I saw like another, I didn't like read deeply into it, but I saw like a few reports that were leaked that like, oh, it was just a publicity stunt and he wasn't actually like yelling at anybody, which is possible. But, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, it was, I mean, yes, people should follow COVID protocols. Is the entire film industry resting on the back of Tom Cruise? No. Does Tom Cruise scare me? Yes. So, you know, that's kind of, it's all wrapped up in there. Like I agree with the sentiment, but do I still think Tom Cruise is like a little crazy? Yes.
There's not a doubt in my mind that he's at least a little, but yeah, I honestly think I would rank that monologue he gave among his top monologues. I think that's up there with You Can't Handle the Truth, Show Me the Money, all those classic ones, but
yeah.
I might be mistaken. But
the delivery was great. The delivery was great.
I'm very thankful for whatever intern recorded it.
It just started right at like the perfect time, you know. Now, it wasn't like mid-sentence or anything. It was just like right
at the start of it all. Oh,
like, oh, maybe there's just like a feeling on set where they're just like, Tom's gonna say something right here. So it's like, hey, get ready.
Hit record real fast.
We can use this in the movie.
Yeah, well, how familiar would you say you are with Tom Cruise's filmography?
I would like to say that I'm like above average familiar with it. I don't know that I'm like totally, like I haven't looked over his IMDb page super recently, but I have like, I would say I have a decent grasp of it. You know, at least like his big movies, you know. I've seen most of them, but there's still a couple that I want to get around to at some point.
Yeah. What of the ones that you've seen, or of, I suppose if you've seen most of them, what's your favorite Tom Cruise movie?
I mean, Top Gun is really hard to beat. Top Gun is, it's so good. It's just like, you know, oh, just like it's, I mean, it's, it like it hits home both on just like a technical, like film perspective, but also just like the camp perspective is also great. And it's just like a really fun and just like I well made in every aspect film. I feel like the soundtrack's great, you know, both like obviously like Danger Zone, but also like the Top Gun anthem is like, oh, like it's like, oh. So beautiful. I love, my favorite part of the movie though is a Val Kilmer moment. I'm pretty sure he's the one who does it, but where he's like, they're talking in the locker room and he's like, I'm dangerous. And he does like that bite and I'm like, oh, what a choice. What a decision. Like, I think it's so good. So that's hard to beat. I like, honestly, Minority Report is up there. I really enjoy Minority Report.
Oh, well, there's two more questions that I ask every guest. What is the most Tom Cruise thing that you have ever done?
It was really funny. This one time, actually, there was like this thumb drive that was in this really secure vault and I had to like jump in and I landed like an inch off the floor. I wish that would be so cool. It's like, you know, like I had this project due the next day, but I realized like I left my thumb drive with all my files on it in the library. The library was closed and so I had to break into the library.
Jumping through the ceiling, hang from the tiles.
I don't know that I have like a thing, you know, but like anytime like I'm like sprinting or like on the treadmill or something, I won't do it the whole time because like it's exhausting. But I'll always have like a stretch where you got like just have like the perfect like straight arm, like straight fingers, just like fingers go, like fingertips going from like nose to butt cheek, just like perfect form and just like high knees, like gotta have that Tom Cruise running form. And so like that's like anytime I go for like a run and I try and get to like top speed, I'll have like that stretch where I'm in Tom Cruise action mode, like really get those arms pumping and it just like it feels fun, even if it probably looks a little goofy.
This is the part of the show where I'm going to give you 1 minute to say whatever you could possibly want to say to Tom Cruise. Your minute starts now.
Hey, Mr. Cruise. I hope you're having a good day. I just wanted to say that I really respect your dedication to your craft, and I think that there's a lot of actors who are in a lot of like action films like you are that don't take it as seriously because action films aren't always seen as a serious genre. And I think that you're very good at playing the game of being a movie star. And anytime I see you in an interview or doing a public appearance, I just really respect how good you are at saying the right things and doing the right things. And hey, if you ever need me in a film, I'm available.
That's perfect. That's a delightful little sentiment. I hope he hires you. I hope one day when I have the 45 minutes of messages, he hears that and he wants to bring you onto his team for, I don't know what his next project really is. He's doing something on the ISS right now. They're going to fly him up to the space station to film a movie. Well, that brings us to a commercial break. After the break, we're going to come back and play a game of Naughty or Nice after this.
This is Tom Skerritt for the Borgen Project. Each year, nearly 2 million children die from preventable diseases. Each day, 30,000 people die from hunger. 500 each hour are children. The Borgen Project is turning this around. We need your help. To learn more, go to borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
Biking in Chicago is more than just a mode of transportation. It's a lifestyle. It's convenient, affordable, and with 13,000 bike racks, parking is never a problem. But with every reward comes a sidecar of risk. In Chicago, over 1,700 cyclists a year are killed or injured in bike accidents involving motor vehicles. Bike safety is simple. First, become familiar with Chicago bike laws. Know your hand signals and when to use them. Love your brain. Get a bike helmet that fits your noggin and deck it out with a headlamp and some reflective gear for riding at night. Bike at least 3 to 4 feet away from parked cars to avoid being struck by a car door being open. Motorists can do their part too by checking their side view mirrors for bike traffic before exiting their vehicle. Most importantly, remember that we're sharing the road. Looking out for both ourselves and each other is the only way to keep Chicago's roads safe, no matter what your wheels look like. For more information on bike safety in Chicago, visit www.chicagobikes.org. This public service announcement was brought to you by Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd. This is Tom Talks. I am here with Garrett, and we are about to play a game of Naughty or Nice. Minority Report, as we know, is a movie about judging crimes before they happen. And since this is one of my three holiday specials, who better to judge crimes before they happen than Santa Claus with his list of naughty and nice? He's basically the precognitive of modern mythology.
Right, and if you believe Santa Claus as portrayed by Tim Allen in the Santa Claus franchise, I believe he has a giant snow globe that allows him to see what's happening, which is not dissimilar in shape to the spheres that are made when the precogs see the crimes happening.
Yeah, basically. That's the connection is there. The connection's been loose with other games, but I think this one's a strong one. So basically, I've got a list of actors who were made famous as children, and we are now, after they're child actors, we're going to deem whether they are naughty or nice, whether they will get their gifts this Christmas or be sent to future prison for their crimes against humanity.
But I'm going to feel so bad, like, this kid's naughty. They sucked. It's like, that's so mean.
Well, none of them are kids anymore. They're all adults now.
I guess.
So we can judge them as children.
That's fair. I'm sure they've come a long way.
we can hope. I kept out some of the ones who didn't have much of a career after. I took out Henry Thomas from E.T. because he didn't do much.
He was great in the I forget what it was for, but there was an ad for something.
Oh, right.
That they made where E.T. comes back and these kids come out, and then he comes out of the house too, and he's an adult. And he's oh, kids, look, it's E.T. We were great friends back then. It was, I mean, it was like,
was that DirecTV or Pizza Hut that did that?
I don't remember. I'm gonna. Okay, E.T. ad. No, not E.T. Adventure Ride. E.T. Xfinity.
I remember that. That was excellent.
It was a pretty, I think it was very fun for a commercial, you know. So he's got that going for him.
at the very least. But I mean, other than that, there's another child actor from E.T. We'll get into it. We'll start with the first child actor. What do we think? Is Macaulay Culkin Home Alone? We can talk about the character. We can talk about the actor. Are they naughty? Are they nice?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, acting wise, I think he clearly did a really solid job. The character, I think, could be argued a little on the mean side. I mean, it was a little overkill for, I mean, not that those, you know, the thieves, I forget what their names are.
It's just Joe Pesci and Joe Pesci's friend. That's basically it.
But, you know, they definitely could have died, which sure. I think would have been a little undeserved. Not that they were nice people, but, you know, so that may be more on the mean side. Daniel Stern, of course, is the actor that plays the other thief. That's not Joe Pesci. And Macaulay Culkin, I mean, obviously, you know, fairly well documented are some issues that he's had over the years. But from what I hear, he's been able to kind of clean himself up a little bit recently, and is back on the in recovery. From,
and he's dating Brenda Song, I think, based on the last E cover I saw him on. I think he's dating Brenda Song, which is
fun. I have no idea, but I'm gonna put him in the nice category.
Nice,
for that, I think.
Yeah, the Macaulay Culkin, I agree, is nice. Kevin McAllister from Home Alone, I'm on the fence. Also, I think because that begs the question: are his actions justified in protecting his home?
Right. It was a lot, you know?
Yeah, it was a little excessive. I think in the world of the precognitives, if the precognitives exist, then Kevin McAllister's actions are justified because the precogs go so much further than setting traps. They just put people in future prisons. So
right. Well, and you know, they never would have happened because the precogs would have seen that these dudes were going to break into this house and they would have been arrested before it even happened.
Right.
You know, so.
Exactly. So nice. Macaulay Culkin, he gets his presence this year. Lindsay Lohan, Parent Trap specifically. Parent Trap era Lindsay Lohan, not Freaky Friday.
Okay. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen the Parent Trap. I don't know. I'll go nice, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Parent Trap, I think she just wanted her parents back together.
Yeah, which, again, I don't know. See, this is some of these divorce movies where the kids want their parents back. It's sometimes it's just it's just better if they're divorced. But that's what happened in the Parent Trap, right?
I think they're trying to get the parents back together. I don't remember if they succeed or not. I don't have a clear enough recollection of that film.
But anyway, I'm just going to say nice. I think it's a fun movie from how I remember it.
Yeah. I want to put together a movie marathon of movies about divorce that portray it in bad and good ways. So it's just Parent Trap, Mrs. Doubtfire, Chef. I don't know any other good divorce movies, but
Over the Moon is a new Netflix animated film. animated musical is very, very good, I think. And I think it handles divorce in a very interesting way. Recommend checking it out.
All right. Speaking of Netflix originals, Millie Bobby Brown, does she deserve coal in her stocking?
No, I don't think so. What's she done to anybody?
She owns a Google Pixel. That's it.
All right. Okay. But yeah, no, it's nice. I have seen, I was going to say I haven't seen anything with her in it because I have not seen Stranger Things. Again, not a huge TV person. I have not seen Godzilla, King of the Monsters, which I should watch because I'm a very big King Kong person. And so I feel like I need to watch the two newer Godzilla films because they're technically part of like the universe that the Godzilla versus King Kong movie is going to take place in. So, but I did watch Enola Holmes, which she was in. And I thought that was a pretty fun movie. And again, like, I don't know. I think like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with.
Yeah. She can get her toys this year. She doesn't need to go to future prison. Okay. This is a throwback, but not too far of a throwback. And we'll group these two as one. Anna Sophia Robb and Josh Hutcherson. Bridge to Terabithia.
Nice. Don't even. Come on. Those are my peeps right there. Don't. Come on now.
We can't put them in future prison for making us cry so much. I love it.
Yo, okay. This is like. So I have the Brandon Fraser Journey to the Center of the Earth on Blu-ray and 3D, of course. It's a great 3D movie. And you know, Josh Hutcherson's in that as well. And it has a really, really great commentary track by the director, who I forget the name of, and Brandon Fraser. And it's just really funny. Like in every scene, Josh Hutcherson's in there. It's like, oh, Josh, such a great kid. You know, he's going to have a great future. And I'm like, yeah, let's go, Josh. I keep wanting, because I also have Bridge to Terabithia, and I keep wanting to go back to watch it. And I just haven't been able to do it because I'm not ready.
It's just so sad.
I'm not ready. Like I love that movie, but I'm not ready. But I did watch Race to Witch Mountain, with Anna Sophia Robb and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And also has, I forget what the kid's name is, but the kid who played the boy plays Kato in The Hunger Games. So it's all, nice. It's this triangle of people. But oh yeah, I love Anna Sophia Robb and Josh Hutcherson and Bridge to Terabithia. I think they're definitely both nice, I would say.
Yeah.
And especially obviously Anna Sophia Robb's character, who I forget the name of. It's like, I don't know, I can't remember. But no, it's because like I did for one of my like my production design class that I took the last time I was physically at DePaul. I had like the final assignment, I had this like TV show, and one of the characters was very similar to Anna Sophia Robb's character from Bridge to Terabithia. And so I did like a bunch of research on her character, but I can't remember her name now. So but yeah, nice.
Okay. Drew Barrymore.
Sorry, that was a lot.
From E.T.
Being honest, it's been a very, very long time since I've seen E.T. And the first time I saw E.T., it scared me a lot.
Valid.
Because I thought that E.T. was very creepy. You know, his design, it's not cute. Which, you know, I applaud them for going like against the grain, but as a child, it did scare me. And so I don't have a lot of positive emotions tied to that film. So I don't remember Drew Barrymore very well from that film, other than knowing that she was in it. But I'm going to go ahead and say nice, because I'm pretty sure that like all the kids, the mean people were like the cops and like the government, not the family, right?
Right. I guess, yeah, she wasn't really mean to the alien at all. She was just a little freaked out of it, which we all were. We were all.
I was.
His age. Yeah.
Very scared.
And they scream at each other. The fact that Henry Thomas was able to like keep a straight face with the alien most of the time is a wonder.
Yeah. Nice. He doesn't count, but nice.
Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris as Doogie Howser, Kid Doctor.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Nice. Definitely nice.
Yeah.
I got it. Was he in Starship Troopers before he was in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle?
I didn't know he was in Starship Troopers.
Yeah. Oh, he was great in Starship Troopers. He plays a Nazi in Starship Troopers, and they make some Doogie Howser joke. But obviously I know that Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle is like the one that really like brought him back as like an adult actor. But he has a very fun role in Starship Troopers. I love Starship Troopers. But yeah, definitely. I mean, I have no problems with Neil Patrick Harris as an adult, really, or as a child actor. And of course, Doogie Howser, the character, was very pretty nice, I think.
Yeah, he's probably quite deserving of his presence, just because, you know, he was a doctor.
Yeah.
Dakota Fanning, War of the Worlds. Tom Cruise's own War of the Worlds.
Right. I don't have a problem with Dakota Fanning. She would later be in Twilight, which I love. However, I don't know if this was her strongest acting job, personally. So this is like, this is where it's like, I feel like we're saying like naughty. It's like a character judgment. I'm like, I'm sure Dakota Fanning is a perfectly nice lady. But for her performance in that film, I'm going to say naughty just so we can have somebody in the naughty category.
Just anyone who's naughty. That, yeah, that's valid. And I mean, I think character wise, she's the one who gets him into a bunch of trouble. If I'm remembering correctly, she's the one who's always running off and getting people killed. But since I watched that one, but
might be true. It's been a while since I watched that as well. Okay. Now I got to make sure that she is, in fact, I'm like 90% sure she's in. Yeah, she is. Okay. She's in Twilight. I was just double checking. I was very sure, but just had to be triple sure.
Yeah. Gotta verify. Cool. Yeah. I think if any of these are going to be on the naughty, I think we are only going to have maybe two naughties on the whole, but we'll get there. Jaden Smith from The Karate Kid. How do we feel about him in the recent Karate Kid?
Well, this movie will always have a special place in my heart because I did go see it for my birthday 1 year. I have a very checkered past for my birthday. When I was younger, I would always like, my friends would come over and we would always go see a movie, and I would always, because I had a June birthday and there was almost always like a couple of big movies coming out in June. And I always managed to pick like the bad movies. Like we went to see like Transformers 2 the year that like Kung Fu Panda came out. You know, or like it was like Kung Fu Panda 2 or something, but like they're like every year I picked like a bad movie, and there was always like a good movie coming out around that time. We went to see Kingdom of the Crystal Skull 1 year. We went to see Pirates 4 1 year, which I actually like Pirates 4 as a big Pirates fan, and I appreciate it even more after the fifth film came out, which I have a lot of feelings about. And we saw Transformers 1 year, which is like but one of those years was also The Karate Kid, which also a film of questionable quality, you could say.
Sure.
Had a great Justin Bieber song to tie in with it, though. Big time jam. I don't think it was a great movie. I don't think it was necessarily Jaden Smith's fault. So I don't know. I feel like I gotta say nice. Sentimental reasons. I think he's got a pretty solid music career going on now.
True.
I think there are plenty of reasons why that movie was bad. I don't think he was like most of it. I mean, he wasn't amazing, I guess, but I didn't think he was horrible necessarily.
Valid. And I mean, he's had some good redeeming stuff. Have you seen it? Do you like Baz Luhrmann stuff? Do you like Moulin Rouge, Romeo plus Juliet, that kind of stuff?
I enjoy Moulin Rouge. I really do not like Romeo plus Juliet. Great Gatsby is an interesting movie. I don't know if I could say I like it, but I do find it very interesting to watch.
Sure. The reason I ask is Baz Luhrmann did a Netflix original series. I think it's only two seasons, called The Get Down. And it has, yes. Oh, have you seen The Get Down?
I know of it. It's on my watch list, but I have yet to watch it. I hear it's very, very good though.
It is worth it. It's got, I mean, Shameik Moore, Jaden Smith, Giancarlo Esposito, yep. Just A+.
Oh, that's
cast.
My guy right there. Juan Carlo. Mm.
Ooh, so good. Oh, you got to watch the last three episodes of Mandalorian. You really do.
I know.
How have you avoided spoilers?
I haven't. I'm fairly aware of what happens, but I'm not really a big spoilers guy. I mean, obviously, like, I respect other people that don't want to hear spoilers, but for me, I don't really mind, especially like Mandalorian. Like, I enjoy it, but I'm not like I'm a pretty casual fan of Star Wars, so I'm not really, you know, invested to the point where I'm gonna be mad if I, you know, find out a certain specific character just happens to be there at the end of the season.
Yeah, a certain specific character. I spoil the whole movie
as opposed to a certain generic character.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Big difference.
Big difference.
So, Jaden? Are you talking about Justice Smith or Jaden Smith, or are they both in The Get Down?
I thought Jaden Smith was in The Get Down. I was pretty sure. I could be mistaken.
I mean, he might be, but I know that Justice Smith is also in The Get Down. So he, you know, Justice Smith of David Diggs is in The Get Down too. Dang,
the
okay,
Get Down
they're
is
both
so good.
They're both in The Get Down.
Okay.
So Justice and Jaden Smith not related, as far as we know, but they're both in The Get Down. Because of course Justice Smith is in Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. Is how I am familiar with him, which I think is really unfortunate because I do not like that film very much. But he was much better in Detective Pikachu, I think, than in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Oh, Detective Pikachu was excellent. I like them. I got to rewatch
very,
that.
Very
one.
Fun movie.
Oh, yeah. All right. I think I've got two more on this list here. Shirley Temple, just in whatever Shirley Temple did.
Oh, I feel like we got to give her a nice, because from the basics that I know, she had to put up with a whole lot of not good stuff, especially during that time, you know, unions, child labor laws were in their infancy, if they existed at all, and especially just the film industry in that time, there was a lot of abuse of actors, especially female actors, and like Judy Garland, like she had to, oh, I mean, like her story is like heartbreaking in terms of like the stuff they did to just like get her in as many films as they could. And I'm sure there was similar stuff with Shirley Temple where she was just overworked and stuff like that. And so I'll say nice.
We'll give her gifts. We won't send her to future prison, which brings us to our last one. Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter. How do we feel about him?
It's great. what would we have against Daniel Radcliffe?
I don't know.
Persnickety?
I don't know.
It's like I know none of these people personally, but you know, based purely on like a few interviews I've seen and you know his movies, I mean I thought he did a really good job as Harry Potter. I really, really love the first two films. They're just filled with so much joy and whimsy, and then obviously things get a little darker as they go. It's really interesting. I did go back and watch the Potter films recently, and it seemed like in like films 4 and 5 they were like really trying to make Daniel Radcliffe into like a teen heartthrob, because he like there was like a lot of scenes with like semi see-through shirts, or like there's like in the fourth one there, like he has to go in the bathtub to like open the, you know, the golden egg, and he's like oddly ripped, you know, which isn't really something we necessarily associate with Daniel Radcliffe. I mean, he's always been like pretty skinny, but there was like a lot of muscle definition. It seemed like that was, I'm sure there was like, okay, we need to, you know, Daniel, we need you to bulk up, you know, so that you can really bring in the teen fan base, you know, which of course everyone went for, Tom Fulton anyway. But that was very interesting for like those couple films where they were just like, really, it seemed like they were really going for that. But yeah, I think he did a great job in those films, and haven't seen him. I did see The Lady in Black, that he was in, which was interesting. I really want to watch Guns Akimbo.
That looks so fun.
Because it just looks very bizarre. It doesn't really look like my kind of movie, if I'm being honest, but it looks bizarre, and I feel like I need to watch it, because you just see like that image of him in like his, like the bathrobe with like the bear slippers and holding those two guns and looking like an absolute maniac. You see that image all the time. I'm like, I gotta see what this movie is about.
Right. He's been doing some real good bizarre stuff, honestly. Horns was so bizarre, but interesting to watch.
Yeah, I did not watch that. He was, I forget, was this him or was it Rupert Grint that was in Swiss Army Man?
It was him.
That was him.
That was pretty funny.
I heard that was a really interesting movie as well. Has a really solid soundtrack. Yeah, I got nothing. I would say he's nice. He came out strongly against J.K. Rowling recently, which was nice to see as well.
Good firm stance.
Added, yeah, that was good. Yeah, oh, nice.
Cool. Well, you only sent one child to the future gulag.
I feel so bad for Dakota Fanning. Like, come on now.
But, you know, I think 9 out of 10 of these child actors get presents this year. If you were Santa Claus, if you were deciding whether they were naughty and nice based on their actions in that one age when they did that one movie.
Yeah, sorry. You redeemed yourself as playing Jane in Twilight, Dakota. You were very scary in those movies. And that was good. But I'm sorry.
Oh, well, awesome. It's going to be a very merry holiday for these kids, hopefully.
I think so, especially since they're all adults now.
Yep, they are all grown people. They can buy their own gifts if they weren't, you know, except for Dakota Fanning. She's not allowed. She's in the future gulag. But yeah, that's what I've got for you. Everything else, there's going to be a song that we play. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay, well, thank you for having me. I hope it was that quality content.
It's A+, 10 out of 10 content, truly.
We truly did not talk about Minority Report
I never talk about the movie with the guests anymore. It's really weird. And we'll be right back after Bad Boys by Inner Circle.
Want to get some clips published? The DePaulia would like to publish them too. We're always looking for news, opinion, and even nation and world pieces. Is your favorite artist in town? We'll hook you up with press passes in exchange for a concert review. You like photography? We do too. Let's get your name on assignment to shoot some marches or festivals or something just as cool. Do you like shooting video? We would definitely love to feature some digital storytelling. Hey, by the way, we also have a podcast called Page 29. Check it out on our SoundCloud. Where do you find our SoundCloud? Well, DePauliaOnline.com, of course. We've recently revamped our news site. Check us out during the week for news stories that don't run in our paper. Seriously, we'd love to meet you and get you working on some creative assignments. Come visit us in our new office downtown and get bitten by the news bug. Everybody is welcome to pitch story ideas in our weekly Thursday night meetings. We're in the lower level of 1 East Jackson. Shoot us an email at eic@depauliaonline.com to get involved.
This message brought to you by the DePaulia and Radio DePaul, Chicago's college connection.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd, and this is Tom Talks. Today's episode, we're talking about Minority Report, one of Tom Cruise's best sci-fi films. Heck, it is his best sci-fi film. I'll come out and say it. It's better than Edge of Tomorrow. It's better than Oblivion. It is a phenomenal sci-fi film, and with a really fun plot, with a really fun premise, and a great team behind the scenes, and we'll get into that. First, we'll get into a synopsis, followed by some fast facts, fun facts, and a data breakdown. Let's get started with the synopsis. So this movie starts in April of 2054 in Washington, D.C. It is their prototype pre-crime police department that stops murders before they happen, which reduces the murder rate to 0%. Murders are predicted using specialized mutated humans called precogs or precognitives who pre-visualize crimes by receiving visions of the future. Would-be murderers are imprisoned in a benevolent virtual reality. The federal government is on the verge of adopting the controversial program nationwide. Since the disappearance of his son Sean, pre-crime Captain John Anderton has separated from his wife Laura and become a drug addict. While the United States Department of Justice agent Danny Whitwer is auditing the program, the precogs generate a new prediction, stating Anderton will murder a man he does not know named Leo Crow in 36 hours. Anderton flees the area as Wilter begins a manhunt. Anderton seeks the advice of Dr. Iris Heinemann, the creator of pre-crime technology. She reveals that sometimes one of the precogs, usually Agatha, has a different vision from the other two, a minority report, so to speak, of a possible alternate future. This has been kept secret, as it would damage the system's credibility. Anderton resolves to recover the minority report to prove his innocence. Anderton goes to a black market doctor for a risky eye transplant to avoid the citywide optical recognition system. He returns to pre-crime and kidnaps Agatha, shutting down the system, as the precogs operate as a group mind. Anderton takes Agatha to a hacker to extract the minority report of Leo Crow, but none exists. Instead, Agatha shows him an image of the murder of Anne Lively, a woman who was drowned by a hooded figure 5 years prior. Anderton and Agatha go to Crow's hotel room as the 36-hour time nears, finding numerous photos of children, including one of Sean. Crow arrives and Anderton prepares to kill him, accusing him of being a serial child killer. Agatha talks Anderton out of shooting Crow, barely, by telling him that he has the ability to choose his future now that he is aware of it. Crow, however, begs to be killed, having been hired by an unknown entity to plant the photos and be killed in exchange for his family's financial well-being. Crow grabs Anderton's gun and pulls the trigger, killing himself as Agatha watches in horror. Anderton and Agatha flee to Laura's house outside the city for refuge. There, they learn Lively was Agatha's drug-addicted mother who sold her to pre-crime. Lively had sobered up and attempted to reclaim Agatha, but was murdered. Anderton realizes that he is being targeted for knowing about Lively's existence and her connection to Agatha. Whitwer, studying Crow's death, suspects Anderton is being framed. He examines the footage of Lively's murder and finds there were two attempts on her life, the first having been stopped by pre-crime, but the second occurring seconds later, having succeeded. Whitwer reports this to the director and founder of pre-crime, Lamar Burgess, but Burgess responds by killing Whitwer using Anderton's gun. With the precogs still offline, the murder is undetected. Laura had earlier called Burgess, revealing that Anderton is with her. Anderton is captured, accused of both murders, and imprisoned after being fitted with the brain device that puts him into a dreamlike sleep. Agatha is reconnected to the pre-crime system. While attempting to comfort Laura, Burgess accidentally reveals himself as Lively's murderer. Laura frees Anderton, who then exposes Burgess at a pre-crime celebratory banquet by playing the full video of Agatha's vision of Burgess killing Lively. A new report is generated at pre-crime, indicating that Burgess will kill Anderton. In a confrontation with Anderton, Burgess admits that pre-crime could not function without Agatha. He killed Lively following an actual attempt on her life that he had arranged, knowing that the murder would appear as an echo within pre-crime and be ignored. Anderton points out the dilemma Burgess now faces. He can kill Anderton and validate pre-crime at the cost of his own life, or he can spare Anderton and allow the program to be discredited and shut down. The flaw in the system, Anderson notes, is that people can change their future once they become aware of it. Burgess commits suicide.
Afterwards, the pre-crime system is shut down. All the prisoners are pardoned and released, although many remain under police surveillance for years. Anderton and Laura reconcile and prepare for the birth of a new child, and the precogs are sent away to an undisclosed location to live their lives in peace. I like this one a lot. I really do. I think that this is one of my favorites looking back on the experience. I don't remember exactly how I rated it, what my data will look like, but we'll look at the data breakdown in a little bit. I just really enjoy this because it is just a top-notch science fiction film. And there's not a ton on the Tom Cruise roster that is just A-plus science fiction. So we'll go into a little bit of the fast facts and data breakdown and all of that jazz real quick. So this was directed by Steven Spielberg in 2002. So, you know, prime cheesy sci-fi era. If you don't know who Steven Spielberg is, I don't know what to say to you. The writers of this movie, this is based on a short story by Philip K. Dick. Philip K. Dick also wrote books and stories that were turned into Blade Runner, Total Recall, The Man in High Castle. He's a phenomenal sci-fi writer, and this is one of his seminal works. The screenplay is done by Scott Frank and John Cohen. Scott Frank also did Logan and Out of Sight and The Lookout, and John Cohen didn't do anything else. He only has one credit on IMDb, and it is Minority Report. So awesome job, John, on this one. The cast is pretty fun as well. Danny Whitworth, played by Colin Farrell, you know, the Lobster in Burgess, SWAT, Seven Psychopaths. He's in a bunch of stuff. Y'all know Colin Farrell. Lamar Burgess is played by Max von Sydow, who is in Flash Gordon and The Force Awakens and also Game of Thrones. He plays the Three-Eyed Raven in Game of Thrones, which I thought was pretty cool. Agatha is played by Samantha Morton, who is in Synecdoche, New York, The Messenger and Cosmopolis. Fletcher, who is, I think, one of the cops who's chasing Anderton, is played by Neil McDonough, who is in Captain America. He's in Sonic the Hedgehog. He's in Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. So some pretty iconic titles for Neil McDonough. Jad is played by Steve Harris from The Rock and Diary of a Mad Black Woman. Ivana is played by Jessica Capshaw of Grey's Anatomy fame. And Gideon, who is, I think, a drug dealer, is played by Tim Blake Nelson, who is in pretty much just Coen Brothers movies. He's in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. And he's phenomenal in both of those movies. There are also cameos in this movie by Paul Thomas Anderson, Cameron Crowe, and Cameron Diaz. That's right, we got to see both of the Vanilla Sky Camerons reprise in a scene where they're just riding on a bus in this movie. And I think that's pretty fun. I like it when they have director cameos from directors who didn't direct the movie. It's always exciting. Let's get into some fun facts as well. For this movie, Steven Spielberg hired the top 12 best contortionists in the world for a single one-off scene of futuristic yoga. You know, really just to sell the point that in the future, we're just like we are today, except a little bit trippier. So 12 contortionists. John Williams, actually, who did the score for this movie, a phenomenal score, was a little bit lazy at times as he reused pieces of score from other pieces and used parts of this score in Harry Potter and parts of Star Wars in this, just because he was running around a lot. This was early 2000s. John Williams was in high demand by directors all over. And so he came late to production for this one because he was doing Attack of the Clones. So he showed up very late for Minority Report, kind of phoned it in, but it's still a phenomenal soundtrack. Speaking of Attack of the Clones, this movie came out within months of Attack of the Clones in the same year. And of course, Steven Spielberg and George Lucas are friends. And this is entirely speculation, what I'm about to tell you. But there's a scene in this movie, in Minority Report, where John Anderton is being chased by Colin Farrell's character. And he is running through a futuristic Audi factory. And the Audi factory looks, I'm not going to lie, very similar to the droid factory from Attack of the Clones. This is coming from someone who has seen Attack of the Clones probably 100 times. It was my favorite of the Star Wars movies when I was a kid. Heck, it's still up there now. It gets a bum rap, but I think it still holds up. So I'm very familiar with all of the
mechanisms in that factory sequence just because I loved that scene as a kid. And watching Minority Report, I was like, huh, I recognize that assembly line there, and I recognize those weird metal arms that are going to crash down on Tom Cruise there, and oh, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are friends. So I'm 100% certain that this movie borrowed the stunts from Attack of the Clones. I think it happened that way because I think that LucasArts made that stunt sequence and I believe lent it to Steven Spielberg for an action sequence in a futuristic Audi factory. And I'm totally fine with it. It made for a phenomenal action scene and it let Tom Cruise be in the future, which is fun. I don't love the car chase on the future Audis that immediately follows that scene because it's so CGI. But I think that the CGI factory makes sense because there are some practical elements to it. But yeah, that's pretty much Minority Report. Quick data breakdown. As you know, I analyze each movie on enjoyment, engagement, quality, iconography, and the Tom Cruise factor. This movie, pretty middle of the road. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I was engaged for the most part. Iconography was a little tricky because not a lot of people remember this one, which is disappointing because it's very good. Heck, it got nominated for an Oscar. I really liked it, honestly. The Tom Cruise factor was pretty high. The quality was pretty good, which gave it a composite score of 65 out of 100. Obviously not the highest, but it is really good. And as a sci-fi, it is phenomenal. Even though, and we'll talk about this later, I think I rate his other sci-fis better because I think that there's more production quality to them. But I really think that this one, as a classic sci-fi, really makes a lot of sense. Like, War of the Worlds is a great film, but this one, it's just corny enough, it's cheesy enough, that it has that 2002 flair. The reasons that I liked Attack of the Clones was that it made me happy to be in 2002. And that's what this movie does. It brings you back there. So a 65 out of 100 might not be a great score, but this is one that I will recommend. Some of these I'll give an 89 and say, yeah, you don't need to watch it. But this one, yeah, it's a solid 65. It's a happy 65. So I actually highly recommend it. And with that, that's all the time that I have for today. Thank you so much for listening in. We'll be back in 2021, in a brighter year, in a better time. So thank you for listening to my holiday specials. And as always, stay gold, Pony Boy.